Dr. Wells.
Yeah, we met.
Across from the table at Cannes.
That's right.
Last night.
I remember.
And this is his publicist, Liz Mahoney.
Hi, so nice to meet you.
Jeffrey Wells.
Pleasure.
Very nice to meet you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
Bye. Can I just relax?
Please feel free.
You look like a director.
Sit back. Thank you. That's a compliment.
But you look like, I'm trying to, why, what, that's instigated. Oh, I know who.
Chris Walken.
No, you've heard that though, right?
I've heard that. Yeah.
You've heard that. No. Who directed Unfaithful?
Oh, Adrian Lyne.
Adrian Lyne. There's a similarity.
Yeah, that
English. The younger brother of Adrian Lyne.
Of that English gene thing. It's mainly an English thing.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I'm talking with a hot director. That's cool.
I was going over the thing with, first of all, I was talking about No Country's metaphor element, which is the Coens are very, very careful, as you're well aware, to let people know, particularly the slower ones, which most of us, myself included.
You're including yourself, okay.
That we're dealing with metaphor here, folks, you know. And then they really tell you, for those that still don't get it, when they have Tommy Lee Jones say that your nemesis is, I think he's a ghost. So, you know, it's like taking magic marker. And so you're really primed to digest this film on that level.
Right.
98% of the people that see this thing. How come he didn't get killed then? I don't get it, you know.
How come Javier didn't get killed? Right.
And I don't, I'm not being too specific for those who have not seen the film, but
right.
You know, it's very, very, very satisfying for me. And what makes it, as I was telling that very luncheon, I was telling Ethan, and I thought that that's what distinguished this film, that made it such a great art film, such a great lament film.
Which is what? The ambiguity of it, or the...
The lament thing is so strong. It's about, you know, it's decency. Our folks had it, and there's less of it here.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm taking anyway.
Yeah.
And that there's a kind of a cloud coming over.
Right.
It's personified by Anton Chigurh, you know.
Right. Yeah, and I also think that, you know, that's a generational thing that happens generation after generation after generation, and yet there never is the demise of the world as we know it, except that it just, you know, transmogrifies into something else. Every generation, whether I have a mohawk and I'm listening to the Dead Kennedys and my parents are going, Jesus, what happened? It was so great back in the 60s when we were at least revolutionizing for something that meant something. You know, so, yeah, I mean, but... In this, the West Texas 1980 version of that, I agree, you know. And yet I've heard some questions, you know, you just bring it up, and I've heard some questions like, did he kill Carla Jean? Which is amazing.
Yeah.
And then also the biggest question, and I know you can erase, I don't have to, right?
I can easily, I got a whole editing.
Okay, cool. Is that, you know, who... the demise of the main character, Moss, and, you know, what, how? I know a lot of people think it's Chigurh, but I don't.
You don't?
No.
You're telling me that?
I absolutely.
Oh, that's new.
And that, to me, is the great irony, is, because I don't think the Coens are really saying anything, and I don't think the Cormacs sang anything other than whatever belief system that they have in that moment is manifesting through these characters and through the story and all that. I don't think they have a great message, you know, or a great, it's not a great morality play that they're trying to inject into our minds, at least, you know. But I do think once you get into the fate, and talking about fate, and Chigurh representing fate in some way, and not even fate can protect itself, because fate is so uncertain and so elusive, that you never know what's around the next corner, and you may prevail. And somebody like Moss going up against, you know, a mythological character like Chigurh, human or not, he gets maimed. And only because I think the purity of this character is he able to go not only head to head with Chigurh, but he also maims him, which I think is genius, you know? And then at the end of the story, Chigurh doesn't end up being the one who does the job. It's right. The Mexicans.
Yeah.
I think it's cool. I like this book.
Yeah.
It's a cool book.
Read it. Plane trip again.
Did you?
To rewrite just for the sheer joy of the
right.
sentence construction.
Absolutely.
The indifference to punctuation, and it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Sam Shepard told me about the book. He was the first one. I didn't even know it was being made into a movie. And Sam Shepard and I were out drinking one night in Austin, and he was like, "You got to go get this movie. I mean, this book. It's a phenomenal book." And I just read it in Cormac, and I went and got it the next day, and I read it, and I was just like, "Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So visual. Yeah. The prose is so dense and so beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, amazing." Anyway, sorry to go on a tangent.
Dense, truly, but it's not. Doesn't feel forced. Like
no.
He's trying to jam anything in there.
Not
that's
at all.
What's so beautiful about it. Yeah.
Like dense flowers.
Yeah.
As opposed to rock. You know.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
I was so loving that final scene of yours with the woman at the pool talking about beer.
Right.
And I know that obviously with all directors, all filmmakers, brevity is the key. You know, do it with less. But I so like the vibe between the two of you. Knowing what it was.
Right.
I wish it had gone on longer.
I know.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Not 5 minutes, but maybe 2 or 3 minutes, you know?
I agree, and I actually brought that up to them, and they felt so strong about that character, about that girl character,
mm-hmm.
that they said, look, I think the most we can do is one scene without introducing her, without having to create a whole trajectory of character.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would be 30 minutes longer, and then it would be a whole different movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But I agree with you, because I love that character. When I read that, I was like, wow, what a great character. But I'm glad that they didn't cut it out completely,
mm-hmm.
that you just get a hint of it, because you want more. You want, who was that? And what was that?
Yeah. And the fade to black is perfect on you. It's really, really...
First time he smiles, basically. I mean, he really smiles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
where
you're
you
right.
go.
You're right.
I have hope for this guy, and he's going to make it, you know?
Because even when your first scene with Carla Jean, which is immensely charming because of the not looking at each other.
Thank you.
You know,
thank
that casual, you know, I'll take it back and screw you, big talk. You know, that's a great relationship, and you know it in 20 seconds.
I love that.
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad that you picked up on that. That was very, very, very important for us.
Mm.
And a conscientious decision not to look at each other and be able to tease each other and be able to establish... that these people are going to be together for the rest of their lives. Absolutely.
Right.
No question.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. I like that, man. It's just made me happy. I had to go through shitty interviews, and now I'm like, oh, good.
That's
I'm
good.
All re-sparked.
That's good.
It's good.
It's good. There's a... Like an amazing year, you know. I was just talking about the American Gangster, that part, which is fantastic also.
Thanks.
Just love the... quality I'm trying to describe, but there just isn't any sense of moral hesitation or concern in the guy.
None.
And yeah, obviously it manifests at the very end, but it's...
Right.
I just love it.
Thank you. Yeah, but Ridley and I wrote the ending together.
I could have seen that guy fitting perfectly into Lumet's Prince of the City. He would have been perfect.
Really?
You know, the same black...
Yeah.
Which is one of my great old-time... Corruption in New York movies.
Oh, really?
Don't you think?
You know, I talked to Bob Lucy for a long time, who Prince of the City was based on.
Oh, how did you... Vincent, you ran him
just,
down?
I ran him down, and I found him, and far away from the city, where he used to look at it, you know, work in the city, and Babyface, that's what he was called.
Right.
And I was trying to find a hook for the character, and I was searching around. I was talking to Nick Pileggi, who wrote Goodfellas, and I didn't have a lot of time between this and that, and I was trying to get rid of this accent and be able to get into the South Bronx thing. And then finally, Bob Lucy mentioned a guy who was not around anymore, but mentioned a guy who was just the worst motherfucker that... New York cops have ever seen, and became a full-blown criminal. And his story is way more interesting than the story that I, you know, was involved in and what we created on film. But I was like, that's the guy.
So he began as a detective?
What,
and became a full-blown...
Full-blown criminal. Full-blown,
well,
was involved in the mafia at one point, and ended up shot in the head in the back of a car somewhere. But at one point, I mean, not to get into a long story, but at one point, a mobster, he confronted a mobster. The mobster said, "Can you wait here for a second?" And this guy, Albano was his last name, this guy, because, you know, I'm fucking your wife, and you're not going to fuck your wife anymore because you're going to divorce her because I'm fucking her. Mm-hmm. And it was a mob bar. And the mob said, can you wait here for 1 second? Went into a car, grabbed a 38 snub nose, came back and shot Albano 5 times in the chest. Albano walked out on the thoroughway, collapsed. Two uniformed cops were there, took him to the hospital. The DA showed up at the hospital, said, Albano, you're going to die. Tell us who did it. And Albano says, go fuck yourself. So Albano lives. He lives. He gets suspended because he told the DA to go fuck himself. Then he started getting into all kinds of criminal activity. Even though he was totally corrupt before, became more of a criminal, and then ended up getting shot in the head at some point. Anyway, I love the character, you know.
That sounds like a pretty good film, seriously.
It does, doesn't it? It does.
Has anybody ever talked to you about it?
No, because I just found out about him when I was in New York. And then once I found out about him, then I tried to get deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper into it. Because I had no idea how I was going to play American Gangster. I was scared out of my mind. I thought, I got to have some foundation, because sure. If I'm going to go against Russell and Denzel, and I'd show up and I'm, you know, tweaked or insecure in the least, I'm going to get crushed. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get crushed.
Sure.
So, and they tried, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
But no, that was, yeah, thank God, man. Yeah. Thank God.
Speaking of the deity, deity seems to have decided 18 months ago, 2 years ago, all right, I'm going to give Josh all these roles in a rush. They're going to just come one after another, and he's going to suddenly be a major guy all of a sudden in the space of 12 months, just like that.
Right.
After doing good work, after popping along, but all of a sudden, just the clouds parted, the sun shone down. Life is luck. Is that what we're saying?
I think so. I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know why. I don't know if something that, you know, there was a comfort zone in me. I don't know if it was a willingness suddenly to not give a shit how I looked anymore or something like that, and just say, you know what, I'm in this. Full bore. I love storytelling. I'm a total film geek. I love working. I love going head to head with these guys. I love seeing if I can pull it off. I love scaring the shit out of myself. And suddenly that was okay, instead of, you know, am I good? You know? Working with them, the Coens, was the best thing that ever happened to me, only because there's such a lack of ego on the set. That there's no petting and there's no, hey, great job, great scene, any of that. I mean, that's just done. That just doesn't exist. So it was a great, as a security factor, it's great to know, or at least learn from them, hey, it's not about being petted. It's about doing the work. Just do the work. Mm-hmm. You can have a brilliant time, but make sure you do the work and make sure it's real and make sure it's believable. I like that. Yeah.
Is the streak still happening? Do you have something you're doing now that's coming up? Or anything
right like now? I mean, we were talking about this movie that Scorsese just decided not to do, and he chose to do another movie with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, I know what you mean. This is the Frankie Machine thing.
They're doing that, but they were going to do Jordan Belfort,
Wall Street guy.
Yeah, the Wall Street guy, exactly. What was it called? The Wolf of Wall Street.
Cool.
And but yeah, we're talking about a few things. I took some time off to direct my own short, and I have a theater company here in Los Angeles that I've been writing for and directing for. And
when is the short done?
Short's done.
Has it been shown?
It's out at festivals right now.
How can I see it? Is it at the AFI? Is it going to be anything?
We'll see if it's at Sundance. We'll see if it's at Santa Barbara. We'll see if it's South by Southwest, Berlin, all of them.
How long?
1542, and it's good.
Don't they always say that shorts have to be at least 15, if not shorter?
Something like that.
Don't they always say that people's attention span is?
I'm exactly at 15, and then 1542 with credits, and it just turned out that way. It wasn't. I mean, literally, I did this short to try and figure out what my strengths and weaknesses were as a director. Mm-hmm. In film. I directed a lot of theater, but on film. It was just an experiment for me, and then how it turned out, I actually said, this is a lot better than I ever could have imagined it would be, and people have seen it, and Paul Haggis was a big fan of it, and wanted me to write it into a full-length feature, and Robert Rodriguez saw it, and he said, this has got you written all over it. You know, definitely put it out there. So I've been urged by others to let it be seen and all that. It's a fun, very, very laconic, again, probably inspired something like from this, but totally different relationship, you know, father-daughter thing, and very absurd. And
title?
Kind of X. Just X. X marks the spot. X is where the mom's buried.
It's been then submitted to Sundance.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see. I hope. You know.
We'll see. Good for you.
Thanks.
35?
Huh?
You shot on 35?
No. I shot it digitally. I shot it for extremely cheap. And it looks brilliant.
What is that software that I heard about a couple of years ago? I'm sure there's other manifestations.
What? Final
that
Cut?
If you, not an editing software, but it makes it look more filmic. Like you shot it more.
Well, you can shoot digitally on 720p. Which is a specified type of, you know, digital chip.
Okay.
And that makes it, that's, you know, that's like the Genesis camera, which Robert Rodriguez uses, which Apocalypto was filmed on.
Right.
That is 720p, and that makes it look filmically. Okay. They use film lenses, which we used film lenses and all that. I would have much rather done it on film, mm-hmm. and then transferred it, and then transferred it back, mm-hmm. Like these guys did with this movie. But it was too much money.
Yeah.
I couldn't afford it. These guys spend $50,000-$60,000 on their shorts, and I have no interest in spending $50,000-$60,000 on a short.
Have you? Do you know anybody who has purchased one of these relatively cheap? They're called Red One.
No, but I've seen them. I don't know anybody who's purchased them. I don't know if they work. I don't know if they're great. I don't know if they're panning out. No, I've seen it though. My buddy Steve Cohen sent me a picture of it and the whole stats and all that, and looks interesting.
It's about 15 or 16 grand or something?
Yeah, something like that, exactly.
That's pretty good if you can own one of those.
Absolutely. And you can do entire films, man.
Yeah.
And as a short, especially to see if a director's worthy or not to film a full-length feature,
right.
You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be the most brilliant thing. If you look at Ridley Scott's short, and Tony Scott is the main actor in Ridley Scott's short, Black and White, I mean, it's shit.
Mm-hmm.
But shots. You can see that he has the eye following the wheel, following the eyes, and the tracking shots that he would do just running along like that. You know, it's great, man. You don't need to have a lot of money. And I learned that from Robert Rodriguez. He's like, there's no reason to spend your whole nut.
Right.
You know?
Make you
15 short films, yeah.
You know,
no, no, I wasn't proficient in cutting. I mean, I was there the whole time, and it was the hardest thing I've ever done. But Katie McQuarrie, who's an assistant editor for Joel and Ethan, helped me out.
Huh.
Saved my ass.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh. Anyway, well, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys.
You know what? Maybe I'll send you a copy or whatever, or give them your, you know. I could maybe afford to do that. I hope you like it. I mean, if you don't like it, then we're screwed.
Well, I won't say it.
Then you just put it out there.
Okay.
Hey, all right.
Well, it's great, man.
Yeah,
let me just do a
thank
real
you.
Quick shot before... can we get the side light into the
sure.
window and I'll
sure.
do a little. There we go.
You want toward you?
Sort of not looking at me, but yeah, that's good. That's excellent.
Let me just do it a couple of times.